Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. 25 years before the Battle of the Little Bighorn, 40 years before the Battle of Wounded Knee, there was the Bloody Island Massacre in the spring of 1850 in Lake County, California, near a community which is now called Kelseyville. The massacre of the Lake County Pomo people, which was an immediate prelude to the massacre of the Mendocino County Pomo people in the Ocoee Valley, where the community of Ukiah, the county seat of Mendocino County, is now located, was in retaliation for the Pomos' murder of Charles Stone and Andrew Kelsey, brought about by the way Stone and Kelsey and other European settlers of that time treated the Pomo people. Ukiah resident Bill Walls has written a play about the events that led up to the massacres. A Time Before Dogs, a true tale of two executions that led to the Bloody Island Massacre. This massacre occurred in May of 1850. The play, however, ends in December 1849. Our guests in this edition of Radio Curious are Bill Walls and Denise Kokika. They both live in Ukiah, California, and are with us today to read portions of Bill Walls' play and to talk about the issues that led up to the massacre. I visited with Bill Walls and Denise Kokika in the studios of Ukiah Valley Community Television on a very rainy day. The sound that you hear in the background is the water on the roof of the television studio. Bill Walls and Denise Kokika, welcome to a curious episode.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
The background of this play, Bill, what drew your attention to this issue that caused you to write the play?
Well, Barry, I arrived from back east in Ukiah about 14 years ago, and I'm one of those people that pulls over and reads roadside markers. And to be honest with you, I can't remember how the first time I heard about the Bloody Island Massacre. And it might have been from the roadside marker. But when I got back to Ukiah, I would mention it to people, and if they knew about it, that's all they knew. That was a lot of Pomo Indians were killed out there in Lake County. When I researched it a little more, just looked into it, probably at that point it's not called research, I found that the next day after the Bloody Island Massacre, the same soldiers that had left Benicia and traveled up into Lake County and done the Bloody Island Massacre, they came over the hill into the Ukiah Valley, marched down Ukiah Valley south towards where Hopland is now, and at the village of Shokajau in the Ukiah Valley, just south of present-day Ukiah, killed about an equal number of Indians. So then I would be asking people, do we know that? No, people didn't know that. And I'm someone, I don't like people not knowing things that I think they should know. And why I think people should know that, I can't explain that, but that's just who I am.
So you were telling me that your feeling is that the content of the play and your research is historically accurate.
Yes.
How did you conduct your research?
Basically just reading everything I could.
What did you read?
The library has a lot of documents, and the Grace Hudson Museum has pamphlet and Kroeber's writing. California Handbook that Kroeber wrote in 1923. There's lots of pamphlets. Those guys in those days didn't write so much books, but they wrote pamphlets. There's a pamphlet on the kind of shelters that the Indians around Clear Lake made. So there's lots of different, very specific type of research that was done back then. So that all that stuff's available, still available, and the Ukiah Library has a lot of that. So one doesn't have to go to a lot of trouble. But when you're researching something like this, what I wanted to do is put these guys, Stone and Kelsey, the two white men that were murdered, but now we're saying executed. I wanted to understand where they were coming from. I just don't think it's enough to say people in history were bad people. I think we as a people want to know what they were thinking, where they're coming from, the historical context. And to get that, you have to read a lot of other books. You know, I read books on Mariano Vallejo, the general at the time that owned that land. Stone and Kelsey got cattle from Mariano Vallejo when he cleared out of the Clear Lake area. It was his cattle, General Mariano Vallejo's cattle, that Stone and Kelsey started herding in and around Clear Lake.
Denise Kakika.
Yes.
Your connection to this play.
Well, my connection is that I met Bill, actually, when I moved in. And being Native, he had told me that he had written this play and asked me if I would be interested in hearing about it. And I said, absolutely. He told me the background. And I was pretty honest and said, I'm not sure how I'm going to take the play. When he explained the background and the massacre, I told him, honestly, I want to hear about it. I'm not sure how I'll handle it. And he read the play to me, and it was hard the first time I heard it to listen to the way, especially Andy Kelsey, was with the Indian character and knowing the history and the background as Bill explained it to me. And he was very honest about it. And he explained the research that he had done. It was hard to get through it. And then at the end, when the executions were carried out, I have to tell you, I was very happy at the end. It's a hard thing for me, being Native, knowing my tribal affiliation. I know a little bit of my history of the way that my people were treated. It's a hard part, historical fact, research, knowing the things that have happened to my people. And so it rings deeply with me. And to know that someone has taken the time to research these things means a lot to me. And to find that historical value is very, very important. And to bring it forward in a play means an awful lot, truly.
Before we go too much farther, maybe you could read some portions of the play.
I want to talk about the historical accuracy. It's very difficult to write a play and have it be historically accurate, because you have to start compressing time, for one thing. And then the second point I want to say is that there are several different versions of things that happen in history. So I had to just grab a version. For example, there's even a version out there. My version is that Kelsey ran into the house and was shot with an arrow through the window of the house. Clayton Duncan has information that says it was Stone that was shot in the house. So a playwright has to, you know, you have a lot of information on the table. You got to grab what can and put it together.
I think it's important to mention that Clayton Duncan is a grandchild of one of the very few survivors of the Bloody Island massacre. He told me the story about his ancestor being a six-year-old girl, hiding herself underwater and breathing through a reed tube in what was then Clear Lake to survive the massacre.
And one more thing about Clayton. Clayton was very helpful. When we had our first meeting, the play was intact. We just wanted him to check it out. And so we have this meeting, Barry, and Denise is there. So I'm a white man, white playwright, in a room with two Native Americans. Suddenly I'm the minority. So I tell him the title of the play. And at the time, the title of the play was A Time Before Dogs, A True Tale of Two Murders That Led to the Bloody Island Massacre. Clayton right away stops me and says, see, I don't like that. To me, they were executions. To me, they were executions for things they did. And so my first instinct is, well, let me think about that. But with Denise in the room, again, two Native Americans, one of me, it was palpable how right it was to use the word executions. So while intellectually I was going, well, let me check this out, viscerally, it was, again, palpable how right that was. Then thinking about it later, we execute people for crimes. These guys, that word fits in this case. But that said, I didn't want to just make these guys as bad guys. That's just too simple. You know, they live in a historical time, and these guys were part of their time. So that's where we come up to this part we're about to read.
On this edition of a curious episode in Radio Curious, this time also on television of Ukiah Valley Television, we're about to hear a reading of a portion of A Time Before Dogs, a true tale of two executions that led to the Bloody Island Massacre. I'm Barry Vogel, and we have Bill Walls and Denise Kakika. May we hear your play, please.
We're going to pick it up where Ivanhoe Poe, one of the characters, has walked off. And Andy Kelsey says to Charles Stone, "Why do you bother with that old man? You know he ain't their chief, their head man. He's their war chief. And he's only that when they're at war, which from what I can see of them must not happen but once every couple hundred years."
"We better hope he stays unemployed then. About the only thing they do consider worth fighting over is revenge for a killing. And we give him more than one cause for that."
"All right, Mrs. Stone, don't you be scared now. Old Andy will protect you."
"You better shoot faster than you do then. There's hundreds of them, and there's you and me."
"So what'd he want? More what?"
"Just more."
"These people. They live 1,000 years without us, and now they can't go a day without their handout."
"I believe that pleases you, Andy Kelsey."
"Everything pleases me today, Stone. Can't you see that? I am a happy man. And yes, it does please me. I like people having it worse off than I do."
"You ain't got it bad."
"I ain't saying I do, Stone, but I have in the past. You think anybody was there with a handout for us when we crossed in 1841? No, and I'll say it again, no. My brothers and me crossed in the first wagon train to start for California, and the first to make it. My brother Ben's wife Nancy was the first white woman to come to California overland. And all those Indians did to honor us on the plains and welcome us in the mountains was to help themselves to our cattle when we looked up and shielded our eyes for half a minute from the sun or the snow, or to shut an eye for sleep. So I got me no sympathy or respect for a people with their hand out. How'd they live 1,000 years before I got here? That's the question I'm asking."
"They ate off these trees, all up in these hills, collected what come off what's all around us."
"Well, why'd they stop?"
"Why'd they stop? I think pointing a gun at them had something to do with it. The gun going off a few times might have had something else to do with it. We shot some of them, remember? We whipped four of them to death, hung them by their hands from this tree right here. Our Encima del Castigo, ain't that the Spanish? Well, anyway, we whipped them."
"'Tweren't me. I never laid a hand on them. It was the stick."
"We wanted our adobe done. Winter was coming. Hurried up, we said, or no beef. No beef tonight. Hurry it up or nothing to eat tonight."
"I did say that, didn't I?"
"Yeah, you did."
"Well, they got through last winter. They can get through the one coming."
"Andy, 20 of the old folks died last winter, starved to death. We got grain sacks in the loft, and they're down here starving."
"And the adobe house is done."
"Yeah, it is. And so's the acorns. So's the season for those acorns they lived on through those 1,000 winters you're talking about."
"Stone, you talk to me like I'm a man who's going to change. And that's just wrong, because I ain't."
"I know it."
"Well, then why do you keep on? Next you'll be telling me to pay them for the land. Rent it from them like the Russians did their fort. Like John Sutter is doing the gold fields. Is that what you want me to do, Stone? Pay them like Sutter done? 3 years on the land for a little food and a couple shirts? What do you say, Stone? Should I get Ivanhoe in here and see what price he'd take? Haggle with him? Negotiate with an Indian? Man to man with an Indian? How much Ivanhoe for the land, far as the eye can see? Far as our best horse can run in a day? How much Ivanhoe? Should I, Stone? Should I get Ivanhoe in here? We'll take what we give him out of your share. What do you say? What do you say, Stone? Should I? I'm sorry. What, Stone?"
"I didn't say nothing."
"Oh, I know. I just like hearing it. Vallejo never paid him for the land. The Spanish never paid him for the land, but you want me to."
"I didn't say pay him, Andy."
"Well, what did you say, Stone? Me and my brothers risk our necks raising the bear flag, going up against Vallejo and Sonoma, and all of Mexico, maybe. Risk our lives taking a country away, and you want me to treat Indians like, I don't know what, like they were gold, instead of just being out there panning for it. Money don't come to us all easy as it does to some, Stone."
"You want coffee?"
"Stone, who do you think stopped the bear flaggers' revolt from turning into a looting expedition? Just a bunch of looting and lawbreaking that first day down in Sonoma."
"You and Grigsby."
"It was me and Grigsby who set our hands down on our guns to back up William B. Ide."
"I know, Andy. I know this story. I've heard it 100 times.
William B. Ide. I'll never forget it. There he is in the plaza, in the very doorway of Vallejo's Casa Grande. When choose ye, he says to us, choose ye this day what you will be. We are robbers or we must be. Must be, he says to us. Must be conquered. William B. Ide. I'll never forget him for it."
"Conquerors.
Conquerors."
Where does the story move to?
Well, from here it's going to go to, there's a thing that's happening that is just the most horrible thing. Stone and Kelsey lived out there across from present-day Kelseyville for 2 years. And so this was at the end of 2 years. So the Indians did not retaliate for cruelties for 2 years. And so the play moves to background, talking about the Donner Party. Charles Stone was in the second relief of the Donner Party. And the thing that was going on that I just mentioned was 50 of the Pomo men, young Pomo men, had been made to carry supplies to the gold fields for Ben Kelsey, Andy's brother. This is an area that Clayton Duncan says in his family has been passed down that 150. My research showed that 50 young men had been made to carry supplies to the gold fields, mm-hmm. shovels, food, for Ben Kelsey. He was going to set up a gold mining operation and try and strike it rich. He gets up to the gold fields, and the miners there are willing to pay a lot of money for a shovel and a lot of money for food and things. You know, back in they were paying $3 for an egg. Anyway, so Ben Kelsey ends up selling to the miners, not doing any gold digging, because he can make a fortune just selling things to people. And Ben Kelsey had a tendency to get malaria. So Ben Kelsey gets sick. He leaves the gold fields. The guys have nothing to carry back. Now they're out of a job. And so the 50 Pomo men, they have to make their way barefoot out of the snows in the Sierra Mountains. And they're going to be cutting across land that belongs to Indian tribes that they do not have permission to be crossing their land. Back to Clear Lake. 50 left, 3 came home. That was one of the final straws that leads to these two men being executed.
You mentioned earlier that it's important to see Kelsey and Stone from the historical perspective within which they lived. Can you tell us about that historical perspective as you understand it or interpret it to be?
Well, to me, what this shows is that there's the two white men living by themselves out here in Lake County. They're surrounded by Indians. The thing that I find really interesting is that they're in the minority, and yet they seem to have control over this whole situation. They're in charge. They have the land. They have the cattle. They are basically in charge of everything. They're treating the Indians pretty much like slaves. They are taking advantage of the people. What they're doing to the women and the young women is horrendous. They're treating the women pretty much like a harem, which is a nicer way of saying they've sexually abused them. Both of them actually were using the women for their own purposes. They were using the men for slave labor. If there was any sign of revolt, they would torture them. And yet, they were living in their time in a manner that I think everybody was living at that point. I mean, they were coming over, they were taking charge of the land. I don't know what else to say.
Can you give us a perspective from the Pomo people, how they saw what has happened to them?
I think from the Pomo and what I had heard was that the Pomo have a story about the Flint Man who had foretold of the white man coming, and that they were told that the white man was going to come, and that they were to accept that when the white men came, that the white man was going to be in ascendancy, was going to take over, and that they were to accept this as it came. And that at some point, the natives would once again recover from this. But in the meantime, they were to accept this. It is a legend that this was going to happen. And so that was part of the reason that the Pomo didn't fight and didn't revolt for a long time. It's just that it finally got to be too much and they couldn't take anymore.
Another thing is it caught the Pomo a little bit by surprise. The Spanish had employed them and gave them a little food and paid them a little bit.
The Pomo.
The Pomo. Where the Americans came in and they made him work and gave him a little bit of food, but no pay. So it was a change.
Well, it's a fascinating story. Well, Bill and Denise, before we close, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
One is, if you could each briefly, tell me of a eureka moment that you've had where something important has occurred to you on this or another topic.
Wow. For me, I think the eureka moment is realizing that history doesn't necessarily have to repeat itself. To see that we have progressed from this, that while there is a lot of things that have happened since then, there is progress, and that races can live together. And there's been a lot of progress, and I'm truly grateful for that. And there is a lot of hope. I guess that's my eureka moment.
And Bill, yours?
I'm going to go along with the same thing, that just how far we have come.
Yeah. And the second question for each of you, is there an interesting book that you could tell us about?
Well, I guess for me, one of my favorite books, and my daughter who lives in Sweden had read this book and passed it to me, and it's called A Mute Message from Down Under. And it's a book about Aborigines, and it's a beautiful book. It's a book that tells the story. And it's pretty much their story, and it kind of parallels the Native American story. And it's brutal in some ways, but also hopeful and a great, great message. So I would recommend that book. Beautiful.
And Bill, book you could recommend?
Well, the only outside reading other than historical stuff for a while I've read is Homer and Langley by E.L. Doctorow, about two recluses in New York that they sort of just never came out of their house for about 70 years, very, very rarely. And their perspective on that America has had a lot of wars in that time. And it made me start wondering, what is the value of being a superpower with all these wars just passing before us? So anyway, that perspective of people without being involved in life, their view on life was interesting.
Bill Walls and Denise Kakika, thank you for being with us on A Curious Episode and Radio Curious.
Thank you, Baron.
Bill Walls is the author of A Time Before Dogs, a true tale of two executions that led to the Bloody Island Massacre. The book that Denise Kakika recommends is The Mutant Message from Down Under by Marlo Morgan. Bill Walls recommends Homer and Langley by E.L. Doctorow. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available on our website, www.radiocurious.org. You can also subscribe to the Radio Curious podcast by clicking on our website. Our programs are also available in CD format. To get a copy, visit our website, radiocurious.org, for further details. And we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and do enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone number is 707-462-6541. Our programs are recorded in our studios in Ukiah, California. Hannah Bird heads our post-production staff. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.